Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco, our lives, our voices. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, caring for queer elders. My second boyfriend came out as gay shortly before meeting me after being married to a woman. He told me that one of his biggest fears entering his new gay life was of growing old alone. That was more than 15 years ago, and perhaps his fear was based mostly on stereotypes prevalent at the time. Society has changed a lot since then. But growing old alone, or at least without adult children to help take care of you in your older years, is still a fear and reason for concern for many gay, lesbian, and transgender men and women. I suppose I should probably include childless, straight, and bi folks in that list. What happens when you or someone you love gets to the point that you need elder health care, whether at a nursing home, at a daycare center or clinic, or in your own home from professional caregivers who are not queer themselves? Will you be treated with respect and dignity? And will your specific health needs, for example, if you're HIV positive, be met? My guests this week represent three agencies that participated in a groundbreaking study and training series in Alameda County. It's among the first, if not the first, local government-funded study of LGBT elder care concerns. The results from the study are mostly encouraging, but they also show room for improvement. Dan Ashbrook is the executive director of Lavender Seniors of the East Bay, which received the grant for the study and conducted the trainings. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
My other guests represent two prominent elder health care providers in Alameda County, both of which took part in the study and whose health care staff received specialized training in LGBT care issues. Diana Garrett is Director of Communications and Planning at the Center for Elders Independence, a nonprofit health plan for seniors who prefer not to move into a nursing home but whose health problems make it impossible for them to stay at home without the help of caregivers. Center for Elders Independence, or CEI, is based in Oakland and provides medical care 24 hours a day, four daycare centers in Alameda and Contra Costa counties, home care services, and transportation. Diana Garrett, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Gilbert Carrasco is the executive director of Salem Lutheran Home, which offers a full continuum of care to about 200 seniors who live in various situations, from apartments and cottages to assisted living and a skilled nursing facility, all on a five-acre campus in Oakland. Welcome, Gilbert.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks to all of you for being here and coming all the way over from Oakland to our San Francisco studio. So let me throw this question out to all of you. What's the most challenging or fearful part of needing intensive health care when you're old and gay, instead of old and gray? How's that? Old and gay, lesbian, or transgender?
Well, the fear is basically a mistreatment among service providers. You have a population that came of age at a time is what we like to call the repressive years. And if you think back to what it would be like to come of age as a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender senior, let's say prior to 1970, you were coming of age in a time where, one, it was considered criminal and in most states illegal to be openly LGBT, and many seniors had to hide, as we know. They were subject to cruel, unusual treatments, whether it was being jailed, shunned by their family, fired by their employers, outed in the media, and also along with the criminalization of homosexuality, you also had the mental health care field saying that LGBT being openly or being gay was considered a mental health disorder. And it wasn't until, I believe, 1973 or 4 that you actually had what is called the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual that diagnoses mental health disorders, and that DSM manual considered LGBT people, you know, it was a disorder then.
Yeah, before 73 or 74, whatever year that
right.
was. Right.
So if you take the legal system and then you take the mental health care field and you put those together, you have LGBT people that are being told that they are criminally insane. So after living a life of being told you're criminally insane and experiencing a lot of repressive therapies often prescribed through behavioral health care clinics, which we at Lavender Seniors have experienced, many of our seniors were put in institutions such as Langley Porter and given drug regimens all the way to more severe treatments such as electroshock treatment. So if this is your experience as a younger LGBT within the healthcare system or the criminal justice system, what must it be like to come out later in life looking for a healthcare provider where you possibly may end up living, you know, potentially in a 24-hour care facility, or, you know, being exposed to where you don't have the independence that you once had and you have to rely on this healthcare system.
So even though society has changed and seems so much more accepting, that fear still remains for people who came out or came of age in those in decades ago.
For a substantial subset. Now, on the other side of that, there's some good news, is that the LGBT community, because of this repression, has developed a resilience and is capable of aging, you know, and develop the strength to age well in a community. But there is that subset that still greatly fear coming out, or are out, but only are out to a certain group of people in that community. And whether that community includes healthcare providers, that can provoke anxiety and fear. What was interesting, I did a little study at Lavender Seniors at one of our programs last month, and we asked about 40 seniors how many people's healthcare providers know that they are actually LGBT, and we had 10% of the room that said their healthcare providers did not.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty astounding to see 10 out of 40 people, especially seniors who you know are seeing healthcare providers on a regular basis, that have not disclosed.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of ramifications could that have if they've not told their healthcare providers?
Well, the file is not going to look complete in terms of looking at the whole person and their needs for various types of healthcare, whether it be physical healthcare or mental healthcare, and also social services. And it doesn't give the healthcare provider a really good glimpse into the type of support systems and the family structures that the client has around them. And then again, some of the behavioral health issues that somebody could be experiencing, if they were dealing still with the stigma of being LGBT and depression and anxiety around that, then the healthcare provider may miss a lot of that. And there are other issues that are common to LGBT people. What studies do note is that we do experience high rates of substance abuse, alcohol abuse, smoking, and those types of things can be missed if you miss the
mm-hmm. And those are at a rate higher than the general population.
Higher than the general population.
Right.
And it's been then with AIDS and HIV as well. I mean, it happens. It's uncommon, but we have received, I believe, two calls in the last year from a healthcare provider where they've recently discovered an 80-some-year-old was recently diagnosed with HIV.
Okay, wow, okay.
I was going to say, it's interesting because one of the biggest things is while it is a big factor from a health perspective, I think it really becomes, it's also a huge social factor. We're dealing with some of the issues with the young generations where we're starting to see, suicides, things like that happening because of acceptance of individuals accepting them for who they are. And just to think about, all the people that have fought for gay and lesbian rights over the years, to have to go back into the closet because they don't feel that they're safe within the environment, mm-hmm. or more importantly, that they don't feel like they can be themselves.
Right.
I think also leads to a very big social isolation, or it gets to the point to where you really don't feel comfortable being who you are.
Which can lead to health outcomes, physical health outcomes.
Exactly. Right. So then you have the health outcomes that just continue to perpetuate because of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Diana, anything to add to what Gilbert and Dan have said?
Well, I think that we, as providing health care, look at the whole environment, because we can't do early intervention and prevention and deal with resiliency factors unless you know all of the things that are affecting a person's health. And if there are mental health issues or environment issues or caregiving issues or all that stuff, all of that is critical to know. I mean, knowing if someone is queer is critical to that, because it affects all those different areas. And receiving care from someone is also very intimate,
mm-hmm.
and we need to be aware of that to provide the best kind of care possible.
So why did Alameda County give you a grant specifically to study queer elder care issues and to develop training to address them?
Well, Alameda County they have not adequately addressed LGBT senior needs historically. I'm new to the county and new to the services, so I can only talk a little bit in general about what I know. I don't believe that any LGBT senior programming, whether it was research and training or prevention or early intervention or direct services, had ever been funded. And this was kind of a ramp up maybe to figure out how to go about funding those types of services and really look at what the need was out there. And Lavender Seniors, in developing a relationship with Alameda County Behavioral Health Care over the last 2 years, have been talking about our needs. We've been doing this advocacy, and it was a matter of timing. They had the money available, the interest was there, we had done our advocacy, and Alameda County happens to be one of the highest percentage, well, specifically Oakland, has one of the largest populations of LGBT people in the country. It happens to be one of the, if not number one, in the top three, I believe, populations for lesbian people, partly due to the migration of people over from San Francisco. And San Francisco is the place that's known where we meet all this community need. But in Alameda County, we're not really up to speed with San Francisco in that respect. And it was a matter of timing. They finally were able to address this.
So, and you, when we spoke on the phone earlier, you said that this was actually, it's not a huge study, it's not a huge sample pool, and it's also, again, it's just Alameda County, but I'm trying to get an idea of, first of all, what it said. It was not, briefly paint us a picture of what the results were. What kind of questions were asked, and what kind of results?
I'll just kind of describe the study. Well, first of all, the study was designed by Gil Gerald and Associates, and one of their consultants, Michelle Eliason, PhD and Director of Research. She was the principal investigator, and she wanted to address the consumer attitudes. So we first did a study of the consumer attitudes at Center for Elders and Dependents in Salem Lutheran.
When you say consumer attitudes, you're talking about the residents in these facilities.
Right.
Thank you.
Because when I approach healthcare providers about doing projects like this, there is often the idea that the consumers would have a problem with this subject matter. If we start raising the LGBT rainbow flag, rainbow visibility, the service needs, and creating a more culturally sensitive environment, would other seniors take offense to that?
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to really take a look at that. So we designed, it was a quick, a small survey for the consumers, and we basically asked them whether they knew any LGBT people and whether these agencies should be welcoming, inclusive, and why, and would they be comfortable socializing in recreational and healthcare programs openly with other LGBT people. It's very simple. And we did that survey with about 30 to 35 consumers at both Center for Elders and Dependents and Salem Lutheran, and what we found that was roughly 97%, a large majority of these seniors were not just okay with the subject matter, they were actually elated in some of the situations. Mm-hmm. We did this at lunch tables, and we had to help them with the survey, you know, talk about it, why we were there and what we were doing, and explain it in a little detail. And the comments that I was receiving from these seniors were things like, when are the gay people coming? They would really light up this center. They would bring art and culture here. And citing a lot of the stereotypical things that you would expect someone...
But in a positive way, at least.
But in a very, very positive way.
Okay.
And a lot of the qualitative comments such as, you know, we fought in war with these people. They deserve equal treatment. Back to the arts and culture. Yeah, it was really nice to see that.
Let me ask, these surveys were more actually oral, not just having someone hand him a sheet of paper and have him write stuff down.
Yes, I took note of the oral because some of the seniors had to have difficult writing.
Sure.
So we really tried to help them. And there was yes or no questions, very simple, and then there was a space for narrative.
Okay, great. All right, okay. Anyway, I think I interrupted you in midstream there. Were you saying something else about... let me just turn to Gilbert and Diana. What did you... I mean, did it surprise you to find that there were these mostly positive attitudes, or that they were as positive as they were? It seemed like, you know, 97% or something. That's huge.
We were quite surprised, actually. We serve a large portion of a community that comes from very conservative religious backgrounds. And we thought that it would be a much higher percentage of people who were uncomfortable.
And there was the ratio roughly the same in both of the centers?
Yeah, I think it was actually very much the same. We talk about religious, issues and things like that. I've got a big Lutheran stamped in front of Salem
right.
Lutheran Home.
Right.
And so you can definitely get the connotations of the religious, and what, the LGBT community has dealt with as far as religious differences. And so it was interesting because you never know. And when you're dealing in a community kind of setting where people live together in apartments or in similar apartments, you never know how the population is going to react. But it was interesting to be able to see how people were open, how they were accepting. And I think the values that the community has, I think, added a lot to that about accepting people for being who they are and kind of really celebrating it in the dignity and diversity of people. And it was that kind of feeling that I think perpetuated us to not only do the survey, but then to continue on. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have, one of my big things was if we didn't have that kind of welcoming environment, we wouldn't have proceeded forward.
Mm-hmm. With the trainings, for example.
Yeah, there's no, it would be very hard for me to be able to sit here and tell you, invite your, LGBT seniors to come to Salem Lutheran Home. Even though we had, unfavorable results when it came to the LGBT population. And so it was nice to be able to actually show that not only were the staff warm and accepting of people who were different and wanted to have that celebration, but that also the residents were very much in favor of it as well.
Mm-hmm. How different do you think the results would be outside of our Bay Area bubble? Any sense of that?
I have a feeling things are changing. It might be a little less welcoming, but we've done some outreach in places such as San Joaquin County, and we have a relationship with the Health and Human Service Agency out there, and they are addressing this issue and starting to see some positive results as well. I mean, I can't speak for sure because I don't have any research or hard data, but traditionally, we kind of get the impression that as we go further outside of the Bay Area and further past the Caldecott Tunnel and out more towards the Central Valley, that as things get more conservative, that there would be a problem with the subject matter. And yes, there I would imagine there is much more of a problem with the subject matter, but more I think about lack of knowledge and awareness and experience, and less more about the acceptance of gay and lesbian people.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are Dan Ashbrook of Lavender Seniors, Diana Garrett of the Center for Elders Independence, and Gilbert Carrasco of Salem Lutheran Home. We're talking about caring for queer elders. Are lesbian, gay, and transgender seniors getting proper and respectful care in nursing homes, daycare centers, and in their own homes? So let me turn to the training aspect. So after you did these studies, you went on and did some trainings with your staff. So what kind of reception did you get from the healthcare providers that were involved in these trainings? Who wants to jump in?
So we'll let Dan go ahead and do kind of the first bit since he performed.
You actually conducted most of the trainings.
I conducted most of the trainings, some of it with consultants. Let me just describe kind of the process first. We started by doing key management to really do kind of a 101 overview of all the layers of issues when it comes to direct service and policy and outreach and, utilizing language and patient interviews, lots of different areas to cover around a training. So we wanted to give the management the overview and then have them direct us on who we really needed, where we needed to focus our training efforts from there. And from there, we broke it down into, marketing staff, marketing communications, human resources, and then the various types of service providers, whether they were, kitchen and nutrition types of service providers versus admin and janitorial to the actual direct care, personal care workers.
Right, one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. One-on-one. And mm-hmm. trainings range, they could range anywhere from a 3-hour training to a 1-hour training. It just depends on the subject matter that we were talking about. But again, very, very focused on the people that we were training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, when you're talking about HR, when we're training HR people, we're talking more in terms of policy and creating a system where new employees can come in and be exposed to the subject matter and know that they will be held administratively if there are issues around their service, discriminatory issues, and really emphasize that discrimination is illegal in these facilities, because so many of these employees don't really think of this and aren't really ready for this. So that's how we would approach maybe an HR training. Whereas when it came to the personal care workers, many of those are from various ethnic backgrounds, wide swings in educational level, many of them lower education level, maybe possibly not even high school diplomas, and then also a lot of religious and strong moral beliefs within the personal care workers. So we really had to focus on the personal stories and trying to find the commonalities between their life experiences and what the life experiences are of LGBT elders, so to really increase their awareness of what that was like to come of age under an oppressed environment.
Well, that's interesting because, Diana, you mentioned when we were talking about the survey results that among the people who you care for, there were, fairly high number of religious people. And, as you mentioned, Gilbert, with the name Salem Lutheran Home, it says in your website that it's a faith-based service or organization. And I do wonder, so how much do religious beliefs get in the way or hamper talking about gay and lesbian issues among your staff as well as your residents?
So from Salem's standpoint, I think it does. It's an evolution. It's a change of being able to say, okay, we are faith based, but at the same time, we have ultimately an ethical situation to provide great care, and you provide the care regardless. When you become a healthcare provider, you kind of overstep what may be my personal opinions or what might be whatever discriminatory feelings that I may have, and you kind of say, the right thing to do is to provide good care. And if care is my ultimate goal, then regardless of what my personal values may be, the goal of actually taking care of a resident and treating them with dignity and respecting their wishes, their diversity, really kind of supersedes all religious values that because there is that stronger value of really providing the care.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was one of the things that I saw that was really prominent at Salem.
And I would have to say I agree. We have, because we pull from areas in East Oakland and downtown Oakland, for employees, we do have a lot of people who have strong religious beliefs. And when we first did the survey with staff, some of those things came out where people were uncomfortable, didn't feel like it was a lifestyle that they could support, kind of things like that. So that was part of why we needed to change how we talked about it in our employee training. So part of what we've done in response to all of this has been with our HR department and new hire orientation to talk about, you may not discriminate against someone like this. And it's also raised a lot of awareness at the center. So I think people for the first time are feeling like, I had a physical therapist who said to me, for the first time, I feel like I can talk to line staff about the fact that I'm a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And they can actually see me and they know me. And to be out and discuss this lifestyle is helping to create a different image with people who are not necessarily coming in contact with people who are out or people that they know in the gay community. And it's a lot of training opportunities. We had a lovely man over at our center at Eastmont Town Center whose husband died. And some of the staff didn't understand and didn't understand why they needed to respond to this as if it was a man whose wife had died.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same kind of feeling. It's the same loss, the same grief. And it was a time to really talk about this and explain and get deeper into it. So there's been a lot of really good teachable moments, but yes, there is a lot of challenge.
Mm-hmm. We're going towards the end of our half hour, but before we went on the air, Gilbert, you mentioned that you had a booth at the Oakland East Bay Pride celebration over Labor Day weekend, and that you're realizing there's also a potential issue or challenge with gay couples or lesbian couples who are looking for a place to have their parents. And is their parent going to have a problem, you know, when their gay kids come around? Hey. Tell us about what kind of information you got.
Yeah, well, one of the things, while it's hard for a gay or lesbian individual to actually come out themselves, what they forget, you know, and I kind of remembered this as I was coming out, your parents have to come out as well, that they have to come out to their families and they have to come out to their group of friends and to try to find a place, you know, when maybe the closest family member that's to you happens to be here in Oakland or happens to be in San Francisco and is, you know, gay or lesbian. And to try to work with, you know, being able to, one, feel comfortable enough to be able to put them as your emergency contacts, and then to say that, you know, it's my my daughter and her partner, or my daughter and her wife, or vice versa. But just having that kind of open opportunity, I think, is starting to come up more often. And we, during the Oakland Pride, we actually had the opportunity to meet and talk to several lesbian and gay couples who were looking for places for their father and for their mothers, because they needed a placement for them and they wanted a place where they could feel comfortable in being able to say, you know, I'm here with my partner, and if you can't reach me, you can reach my partner. And I think that's becoming a really relevant topic, that as more and more people come out and are actively open and living their lives as gay and lesbian couples, that we really need to make sure that we're addressing that and that people are comfortable with not only them as an LGBT group, but that their parents are also comfortable in the environment that they're at.
Okay. One last thing, because we kind of got to wrap it up in the next minute or so, but half hour goes fast. Is this sort of a pilot study in a way? What's next? I mean, what might we see coming out of this in terms of a larger impact on...
Well, the outcome for Center for Elders and Dependents in Salem Lutheran is we finally feel that we've developed a training model where we can leave these agencies to do this training themselves, and they have a system in place to address this on their own, because it's an LGBT small elder advocacy organization. We can't be there to do this training for everybody, and it's challenging.
You're the whole staff.
Exactly. And money, you know, money's short these days. But we've now taken this basically the same program, and we're duplicating it throughout South Alameda County senior centers. And we've just started the survey process, and we're seeing the same types of results come out of the consumer surveys. Haven't started.
So Hayward and San Leandro so far are just as supportive as Oakland?
We're looking at, we see the willingness to be, but we want to dig in and see what the studies will reveal. And we're looking at that all the way as far south as Fremont and Newark.
Good. Then we'll have to call up our old San Francisco centered stereotypes about the rest of the state.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to thank my guests, Gilbert Carrasco of Salem Lutheran Home, Diana Garrett of the Center for Elders and Dependents, and Dan Ashbrook of Lavender Seniors of the East Bay. For more info about these organizations and their services, here are their websites: lavenderseniors.org, salemlutheranhome.org, and cei.elders.org. Notice there's two dots in that, cei.elders.org. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We thank KLW for studio use and airtime. Please consider a tax-deductible donation at our website, outinthebay.com, where you can also sign up for free weekly podcasts, listen to 6 months' worth of archive shows, and sign up for Stitcher. That's right, Stitcher, the app that lets you download radio programs to mobile devices. It's all free. It's on our website, outinthebay.com. Thanks to WY Enterprises for maintaining outinthebay.com. Services for your life and your business, wyenterprises.com. Thanks also to our engineer this week, Joanne Marr. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, general comments, and questions. Are you out there? Write to us, Eric at outinthebay.com and Marilyn at outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.